Today we want to talk about standing strong. Talk about standing strong. During those tough times in your life, during tough circumstances, tough situations, when people or other, you know, culture or events seem to be going against you, how to stand strong. And we want to look at one of the more familiar stories from the Bible, that being Daniel in the lion's den. If you grew up in church or went to church as a youngster, chances are good that you have at least some familiarity with this story. Back when I was a youngster, growing up in church, this is one of the favorite stories in Sunday school, and we did it with a felt board. Okay, so this is before we even had TVs, or at least TVs in church. Okay, and so that blue is a piece of felt, and these, you know, things are little cutouts, and it's with the invention of the felt board that the Daniel story becomes a children's story, right? You got the cute, cuddly little lions, the angel is smiling. Daniel looks like he's 12 in that story, okay? And so it's just continued. This is a photo from the Beginner's Bible. This is a Bible that we use in our preschool rooms and other early childhood classrooms. It's a great Bible. But again, you know, Daniel looks a little older there, maybe in his 30s or 40s, but the lions look like pets. You could just, you know, have them over in your backyard and throw the frisbee, you know, at them. They'd come and bring it back, except they're cats and they don't do that kind of thing. But you get the idea that this has become more of a children's story with cute animals and Daniel looking, you know, in the prime of his life. And that's one of the challenges with this story is that we tell it in a kid-like fashion. But the reality, though, is much different than the kid's story. You see, at this point in the story, Daniel is most likely in his 80s, towards the end of his life. And so he's staring, you know, staring down death. He's closer to death than he is to any of those pictures. He's an old man. And the lions are not cute, cuddly kittens. Lions are a different type of cat. Now, we're not accustomed to seeing lions around here, except for maybe at a zoo. But occasionally in these parts, you do hear of a sighting of a mountain lion or that type of thing. Last summer, Kello ran a story of a mountain lion sighting along Southeastern Avenue, along the bike trail there. And two summers ago, when I was running on that bike trail, it was towards dusk and was running, and all of a sudden, all the people that had been passing me, exactly, it's because I'm slow, they were turning around and coming back to me, and that's kind of weird. I thought, that's really odd. And as I got closer to where they were turning around, people were either turning around or going into Southeastern and kind of going around whatever that I couldn't see. And the trail's not being repaired. I couldn't quite understand what was going on. And got close enough, and sure enough, there was this beast, this animal. It wasn't a dog. It wasn't a, I don't know what it was. It could have been a coyote. Could have been a you know, something, but it was not a deer, it was not a dog, it was an animal that was making all of us on the bike trail that evening stop and move, or stop and turn around and go back, all right? And so when we talk about Daniel in the lion's den, try to erase Daniel as this young, handsome dude, think of him as old, and try to think of the lions not as cute, cuddly animals that you would have in your living room, but animals that you would make you stop your tracks and, you know, change course from wherever you are going. Some things have also changed. Other things have changed in Daniel's life as well. In the lion's den story, Daniel is now serving under King Darius. This makes Darius the third king that Daniel has served under. And as soon as Daniel's reign, or Darius's reign begins, he reorganizes the empire into 120 satraps, or maybe legislative districts is our best connection to what a satrap would be. And so there's someone in charge of each of these areas, and then Darius puts three guys in charge of all 120. And Daniel is one of these three leaders who oversees the whole empire. Their jobs include protecting against rebellion, levying the taxes, and guarding the nation's financial affairs. And so we want to pick up the story in Daniel chapter 6, verse 3. It'll be on the screen behind me. It'll be in the Bibles in front of you. If you've got your YouVersion app on your phone or tablet, you can pull it up that way as well. Daniel 6, verse 3. Daniel soon proved himself more capable than all the other administrators and high officers. Because of Daniel's great ability, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. If there's one constant theme in Daniel's life, it's this: he stands out. And he serves with excellence, and he always goes the extra mile. Darius, again, the third different king that he has served under, is also the third different king to recognize this and decides to make Daniel essentially prime minister of the empire. He is second only to the king. And yet what looks like a promotion from the outside stirs up all kinds of trouble on the inside. And how do you think those other two administrators, the ones serving with Daniel, took the news that Daniel's going to be prime minister and not them? It goes about as well as we would think. Verse 4. Then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs, but they could not find anything to criticize or condemn. He was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy. If you're taking notes and you're a sole provider today, the first note isn't fun, but it's true. The first note is this: when God raises you up, expect people to tear you down. When God promotes you, when God raises you up, when you take a stand, when you stand up, stand strong, make a difference, take a declaration for your faith or for something that's important to you, expect people to tear you down. I'm not sure how this could work or will work in your life or mine, but let's say you receive a promotion at work. And oftentimes it's the people closest to you, or the ones that you think should be happiest for you, are the ones that are most jealous or critical of you. Just like Daniel's buddies were when he got promoted and they didn't. Or maybe God speaks to you very clearly about something controversial that others in your life are going to have a hard time understanding. Maybe you're going to downsize your home, get your financial affairs in order, get out of debt. Maybe you're going to adopt a child. Maybe you're going to befriend or hang out with some person or some group of people that your tribe doesn't associate with. Same principle in play here. When God raises you up, expect others to tear you down. The Australians and the New Zealands have a saying for this. In fact, they call it the poppy syndrome. Whenever a poppy plant grows tall, others come and chop it off at the bottom. And these rivals of Daniel cannot stand that he's been elevated and they haven't. It's that poppy syndrome. Verse 5. So they concluded, our only chance of finding grounds for accusing Daniel will be in connection with the rules of his religion. You see, they look at Daniel's life. They can't find anything wrong in the guy. They can't find anything to accuse him of. They go through everything, can't find one smidgen of evidence to disqualify him from service to the king. And so they say, we've got to do something in connection to his religion. That's the only way that we will trip him up. That's the only way we can get him disqualified from being prime minister. And so they devise a plan to attack him. And I know it's been said several times from this stage, but it bears saying again, if you are not ready to face opposition for your obedience to God, if you are not expecting people to tear you down, you are not ready to be used by God. It's a difficult truth, but if you're not ready to face that opposition, then you're not quite ready to be used by God. Daniel is standing out. He's standing up. He's standing strong. And sure enough, there's opposition against him. Verses 6 through 9. So the administrators and high officers went to the king and said, long live King Darius. We are all in agreement. We, administrators, officials, high officers, advisors, and governors, that the king should make a law that will be strictly enforced. Give orders that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions. And now, your majesty, issue and sign this law so it cannot be changed, an official law of the Medes and the Persians that cannot be revoked. So King Darius signed the law. So these advisors devised this plan to disqualify Daniel from service to the king. They know that the new king, Darius, has a bit of a problem on his hands. He's got all these different legislative districts. He's got all these new administrators that are trying to keep unity within his empire. And so this law is interpreted as an act of national unity. Look, king, there's all these different cultures. There's these different religions. Different people are praying to different types of gods or different types of things. How about for the next 30 days, everyone prays to you? We'll all kind of put our arms around each other, sing kumbaya, and we'll all be kind of one people for the next 30 days. Good idea, king? King's like, yeah, that sounds awesome. Everyone prays to me for the next 30 days? What could go wrong? And Darius has no reason to, you know, suspect that his advisors are up to anything but, you know, his best intentions. And this presents quite the problem for Daniel. And again, when we see Daniel as a young man surrounded by cute, cuddly lions, we do not recognize that Daniel has no idea whether God is going to rescue him or not. No idea. And so when this law comes down, Daniel has three options, right? First is he can simply stop praying. He's 80. He's lived a life of faithful service. He's completely trustworthy. No one can find anything wrong in his life. I'm sure he was tempted to say, God, can you give me 30 days for 80 years? I've served you my entire life. If I don't serve you for these next 30 days, I can live. I can continue to serve you more. If I just stop praying for 30 days, he could have stopped praying. Second thing he could have done is he could have faked praying. Right? He could have continued his prayer ritual, his morning prayer, his during the day prayer, his evening prayer. He just didn't have to pray out loud. He could have just, you know, had his head bowed and eyes closed and hands folded, but just in the silent prayer thing. Right? And so when people try to come up and say, hey, are you praying? He could have said, no, I'm just meditating. Kind of praying, kind of not. Right? I'm just thinking. Just thinking through my day. Again, not quite the truth, but an option for Daniel. Third option was to continue to pray. Do what he's been doing. Praying publicly, praying out loud, risking certain death through being sentenced to the lion's den. Verse 10 reveals what he decided to do. But when Daniel learned that the law had been signed, he went home and knelt down as usual in his upstairs room with its windows open toward Jerusalem. He prayed three times a day, just as he had always done, giving thanks to his God. That leads us to our second note this morning. Kneeling to pray is what gives you the strength to stand. Kneeling to pray is what gives us the strength to stand. Our first response to trials, to difficult times, should never be to panic, but to always pray. And yet oftentimes our actions are quite the opposite. You see, we face a crisis, we face a difficult circumstance, we face a trial, and we jump into it. We throw the gloves off and we're, you know, dig into the problem or dig into the crisis. What can we do? What can we do? What are our options? How can I manage this? How can I control this? How can I navigate this situation? And when we get to the end of all those options and we run out of them, we say this, well, all we can do now is pray. It's our last resort. We've tried all of our options and we get to the end and we say, well, now all we can do is pray. Do you ever wonder how God might feel about that thought process? And I don't want to discount all of our efforts. Certainly when problems or tough times come your way, it's no time to, you know, go hide in a corner and not do anything, not try solutions, not try to solve the problem. But prayer should not be the last thing that we do. Our mindset should be, we can pray. Not, well, I guess all we can do now is pray. You see the difference between that mindset? And we can confess our shortcomings, we can humble ourselves, we can ask the King of Kings to work in the trial that we're facing, to provide a solution, to meet the need, to supply us with whatever we need to endure the trial that we are facing. And so Daniel makes that decision to pray like he always has. And we go back to the first week of this series, I'm convinced that much of Daniel's success was based on his pre-decisions. In week one, he pre-decided not to defile himself with the food that was set before idols. Somewhere in his life, decades before this moment with the den of lions, he decided that he was going to pray to God three times a day, morning, sometime during the day, and at night. And so when he's in his 80s, and he's faced with this capital punishment of death, Daniel has made decades of that decision. So it's a relatively easy one for him to make. And I don't know about you, but if you haven't pre-decided your plan to get to know God, chances are you're not going to get to know God. If you don't have a plan, you're planning to fail. If there is no predetermined plan for how you want to get to know God better, I can almost guarantee that you're not going to get to know God better. And so that when you do take that stand, when you take that strong stand and the trial comes, the heat comes, the pressure comes, you don't have the past behavior that Daniel had to get you through that tough time. You know, for me, it's a couple of routines that I start most days with, not necessarily every day, but I start off most days with a couple of routines. I can't wait till night. At night, I become a bit of a crank, a bit of a crab. Yeah, family calls me grandpa at times. But you know, 10 o'clock comes around, I want to go to bed. And that's when most people go to bed. At least most people wired like me go to bed. Okay? But most of my mornings start the same way. Get up, go for a run, and pray while I'm on my run. And it's early. It's nowadays it's dark. And it's outside and it's quiet. I can pray for my family, and I can pray for you. I can pray for the challenges awaiting my day or my week. I can clear my head. It's a good time to focus on God during that run. After the run, brew a cup of coffee and read the Bible. And there are so many ways to do this. Unfortunately, you and I live in a day and age where there are no excuses when it comes to spending time with God. Because you don't get the excuse, and I don't get the excuse, well, I don't know what I'd do. Really. You have no idea how to spend time with God if you were able to pre-decide how to spend that time. I have a Bible that I use. It looks like this. It looks like a Bible. On the back of that Bible is a read through the Bible in a year plan. It has the date. It has an Old Testament reading, a reading from the Psalms, and a New Testament reading. By the end of the year, I've read through the Bible. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes a day. It doesn't take an hour. It doesn't take a half hour. It doesn't take 5 minutes, though. It takes a little more than that. We also provide you with this brochure each week. This soul provider, okay? It's her second to last Sunday. Got to have a little fun, okay? And inside that soul provider is a devotional written for every day of the week. And that soul provider is written by you. It's not written by me. It's not written by Pastor Doug. It's not written by staff. It's written by you. And each week, one of you takes a turn writing that. It's got some scripture. It's got some commentary. One or two questions for you to think about, a challenge maybe to do throughout your day. Maybe you're in a Bible study or a small group here or outside of here where you need to do something each and every day or throughout the week to get you ready for that study. I don't really care what it is, but you need to pre-decide how you're going to spend time with God so that you get closer to God. So that when those trials come, when the lion's den comes, you can look at your life and you've got that habit built in your life so that when it comes time to make the tough choice, it's not as tough of a choice. But without that habit, without that past, without pre-deciding, it's a much more difficult decision. For Daniel, no-brainer. Been doing it his whole life. But if you haven't been doing it your whole life, you come to that trial, you come to that temptation, you come to that fire, it's difficult. At some point in your walk with Jesus, you're going to take a stand. It could be a stand against some big world issue that our culture is dealing with. Perhaps this election season, you're going to take a stand on some issue or some candidate that won't be popular with your tribe or with your family or your friends. Maybe you need to break up with a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Maybe you need to break up with a group of friends because they're pushing you to things that you know God is not happy with. Maybe you decide not to pursue a certain business deal because it lacks integrity. And so you decide to trust God with that decision rather than make the money. And I guarantee going through your mind as you're deciding whether or not you're going to make that decision is this: what happens if my family or friends ostracize me? What happens if I don't get a new boyfriend, girlfriend, or new group of friends? What if I get fired because I don't take the deal? And I wish I could tell you that it'll be okay, that it'll work out just the way you want, that God will intercede and cause it to work out for your benefit. But I can't tell you that. Every time I read this story, every time I read Daniel in the lion's den, and it gets to the point where the king finds out that Daniel's the one that's broken the law, every time I read it, I so want the king to find out, oh, it's Daniel? Oh, no, we can't do this. I can't send Daniel to the lion's den. And so every time I read this story, I want the king to just reverse the law and say, you know what, I'm king. I didn't realize that Daniel was being trapped or set up. This isn't going to happen. And spare Daniel from having to go into that den of lions. Every time I read this story, I want Disney to intercede. Right? That's what a good ending looks like. But it's not a Disney movie. And Daniel was living real life. And your trial is a real trial. And we serve a sovereign God whose ways are often higher than our ways, whose understanding is higher than our understanding. And God often does things that make no sense to you and I. So I cannot promise you that if you take a stand, that you're not going to face consequences. What I can promise you is this: when you do what's right, you can always trust God with the results. When you and I do what's right, we can always trust God with the results. You see, Daniel doesn't know how this is going to end. He's praying in his room, disobeying the official law of the land. He's not thinking he's going to end up as a Sunday school story on a felt board someday. All he knew is that for 80 or so years, he had been faithful and trustworthy and loyal to God. And he knew that no matter what, God would be faithful to him. He knew that if he made it through that den of lions, that God was faithful to him. And he knew that if he did not make it through that den of lions, that God was also faithful to him. In Darius's hand is forced, he somewhat unwillingly falls through on the punishment of sending Daniel to the lion's den. We note the king is severely troubled by that decision. He spends the whole night praying and fasting and just begging his God or some God or our God for Daniel's life to be spared. And all that we know is that by the power of God, God shuts the mouths of the lions. And I believe with my heart that this is a literal story, a historical event that happened that reflects God's goodness and grace and sovereignty in a real event. It's not just a good story. It's not just a moral tale or an allegory to communicate some truth to us, but it happened. And so in verse 22, the king races to the den, finds Daniel, and Daniel says these words, "My God sent his angel to shut the lion's mouth so they would not hurt me, for I have been found innocent in his sight, and I have not wronged you, your majesty." And the king was overjoyed and ordered that Daniel be lifted from the den. Not a scratch was found on him, for he had trusted in his God. Why was Daniel spared? Because he trusted in God. When you do what's right, when I do what's right, when we do what's right, we can trust God with the results. And so if you're facing some sort of opposition today, remember that when God raises us up, other people will tear us down. It's part of it. You've got to know that going in. The people around you in your life, they don't want you to change. Most of them don't want you to change. Most of the people in your life don't want you to take that stand. They don't want you to get closer to God. They don't want you to get better. Because when you stand out and stand strong and make that change to better your life, to get closer to God, indirectly it points back at your tribe, your group, your friends, your family. And they're like, well, what's wrong with my life that this person is doing this? I thought we were okay. I thought I was living okay. Why do you have to do that? Don't do that. You don't have to do that. You don't have to stand out like that, stand strong like that. Most people in our lives don't want us to get better. They don't want us to change. So expect that. Know that going in, even a simple stand, like pre-deciding how to get closer to God, is going to result in some resistance. As the worship team comes back up and they prepare to lead our closing song, it's a fantastic song, by the way. It's the perfect song to end our time this morning with Daniel in the lion's den. We're also going to prepare for our benevolent offering. The offering that we take on the third Sunday of the month goes to meet needs within and outside of Hillcrest. But I want to close with the story of what a modern-day Daniel might look like. See you at the polls the day in September when middle and high school students rally around their school's flagpoles and they're encouraged to arrive early to school to pray for their school. As a high school student, I participated in this. It's a unique way to pray for your school. Stand strong with other classmates who love God and love others. And though I feel connected to student ministries, I totally spaced this off this year. It was September 28th. It was a couple of weeks ago. I was scrolling through Facebook day or two after the See You at the Pole event, and I came across the story of Hayden Philpott. He's a student at Lake Mineola High School located east of Orlando. And Hayden was the only student to show up at his flagpole that day. Think about that. Think about knowing that it was See You at the Pole Day, knowing it was the day and the time to pray for your school, going to school early, expecting to have at least a couple other friends there to join you in prayer for that school. And when you get to the pole, there's no one. And if I was Hayden, I don't know if I'd stay there, right? At least God, I went. But Hayden stayed. And this picture was taken by someone driving past the school in the way that only God works out these moments. This person, random passerby, drives by, takes the photo, posts it with these words. I want to commend the young man that stood alone at Lake Mineola High School's See You at the Pole Day. I welled up with tears, happy tears, proud tears. I honestly did not know that it was today until after I had left and heard it on the radio. And please take a moment to pray for our children, our school teachers and administrators. Pray for protection over them, guidance, wisdom, and a wonderfully blessed year. A couple days later, Hayden kind of trended or whatever, picked up on other news outlets, picked him up, and he had this to say. When I went out and saw no one was there, I just expected others would come a little bit later, and I started praying. And when I realized that no one else was coming, I thought that this could be used to influence the community or even just one person. So that's one of the things I prayed for, the first and the biggest thing. I never expected it for it to become this big. And there are tons of other people that stood at the flagpole alone, but somehow I'm the one in this situation, which is kind of crazy and awesome, because I can represent those people too. I'm humble, amazed, and glad that God was willing to use me in this way. And it's also super overwhelming. And so Hillcrest, God is calling each of us to stand strong. To realize that your decision to stand strong invites opposition, and that it requires prayer, and that it demands that you and I trust God with the results.